Friends, in my today's lecture, I'll be giving a little spicy stuff, in the sense I'll be little delving deep into Advaitic structure, the deep structure of Advaita, how Advaitins have exactly tried to give an epistemology to make their philosophy understandable. Why epistemology is meant for? Epistemology is the mechanism of knowledge. How does knowledge take place? And what are the products of knowledge? And what is the necessity of knowledge? And whether a knowledge is a stable knowledge, viable knowledge or not? What is the erroneous knowledge? And why does erroneous knowledge take place? All this is discussed in epistemology. And that is what we will be discussing today in a little deeper level. So you have the handouts. Wherever you have doubt, please ask me there and then, so that we proceed. Okay. So there is a basic rule in Indian philosophy which is applicable to all the schools, almost excepting a few schools of Buddhism, that the object of knowledge is determined by the process of knowledge. That is manadhina meya siddhihi. The meya, the objects of knowledge, are determined by the process of knowledge. The meyas, the objects of knowledge, are jiva, the soul, jagat, the world, Ishvara, in the event those schools who accept Ishvara, for them, the God. Since the objects of knowledge follow the means of understanding, we need to inquire mana, that is pramana, that is the means of knowledge first, before we go to maya, the objects of knowledge. The nature of mana, the epistemic tools are designed to determine the nature and status of maya, that is here. In Advaita, those are metaphysical realities. You have this. In Indian philosophy, the just technical term to be known in this context is pramana, a means of knowledge or a source of knowledge. Hence, the nearest term for epistemology in Sanskrit is pramana vichara. A question may arise as to why should we start with the pramana vichara. The question as to how knowledge is attained must be answered first, before we go to deal with the process as to how knowledge goes to determine the objects. And this is through establishing the means which are known as pramana. And any claim to know anything must be supplied by evidence and on authority. And that authority is what is called as pramana. The claim of the Mimamsaka that there is a swarga is based on one evidence. That is the Shruti pramana. Nobody has seen swarga. Swarga cannot be proved inferentially or by any other means. It can be only known through Shruti as a pramana. The claim of fire on the mountain top, where only smoke is visible, is based on the authority of Anumana Pramana. Not only these two, but any claim to knowledge must be grounded on evidence, the Pramana. What is gained through the means of knowledge is called Prama, that is knowledge. The word Pramana is defined as Pramakaranam Pramanam. That which is a means to knowledge is known as Pramana. Apart from Prama, which is knowledge, there is another word frequently used in this context, and that is jnana, which is also used as knowledge. Strictly speaking, jnana is cognition. The reason is this. Sometimes prama is translated as valid knowledge. The term knowledge does not allow any attribute as valid or invalid. The term knowledge in English stands for valid knowledge. What we understand by the phrase valid knowledge is represented by the term knowledge itself. The word valid is superfluous and the word invalid is contradictory. There cannot be an invalid knowledge. knowledge is always valid. As in the case of square circle, that is invalid knowledge is like square circle. It is not possible to coin such a word. Hence, but it is used in the books. If you see the Indian philosophy books, they always say valid knowledge. That is not a right type of usage. Hence, comparing to the word prama, jnana is a weaker word. Jnana does not tell whether it is valid or invalid or doubtful. It can either be valid cognition or invalid cognition or doubtful cognition. Samsaya jnana, viparyaya jnana possible, but samsaya prama is not possible. There is no samsaya prama. In addition of attributes is possible in case of jnana, samsaya jnana, asamsaya jnana, viparyaya jnana, etc. Any cognition has all these three possibilities, but it is not the case with knowledge. It is always valid. Hence, to summarize this part, prama is knowledge and jnana is cognition according to convention. The number of pramanas depends on each school and their philosophical superstructure. For Charvaka, there is only one pramana. They say that pratyakha is enough. See, by saying that pratyakha is enough, I felt that Charvaka has accepted Anuman also. Now, he says that pratyakha is the only pramana. How did Charvaka know that pratyakha is only pramana? By Anuman only. Charvaka must have inferred that there is only one pramana, that is pratyakha. Because pratyakha cannot be seen. Pratyakha is not, pratyakha cannot be pratyakha. So that there is one pramana, by saying that there is only one pramana, Charvaka has accepted almost Anumana. So Charvaka is, in this way, Charvaka is refuted. Buddhism accepts two pramanas, that is pratyakha and Anumana. For the name sake, Sabda also, because Buddha Vachanas are accepted. Vaisheshikas also accept two pramanas. Initially, Vaisheshika school did not have any leaning towards Vedas. It was not considered as an Astika school. I was talking about Astika and Nastika. Why Astika and Nastika, orthodox and heterodox schools have been formed on the basis of acceptance of Vedas? But that is not how it looks to be. Because even Vaisheshikas do not accept Veda as a pramana. They accept only two pramanas, that is Pratyaksha and Anumana. Samkhya and Yoga accept three pramanas, Pratyaksha, Anumana and Sabda, that is testimony. Nyaya accepts four pramanas, that is Pratyaksha, Anumana, Sabda and Upamana. In Purva Mimamsa, the Prabhakara school accepts five pramanas, that is perception, inference, comparison and postulation. In addition to this, they accept Arthapatti, that is postulation. In addition to this three, that is perception, inference, verbal testimony and comparison, they accept Arthapatti, postulation as another pramana. The Bhattas accept six pramanas, which includes non-cognition as a pramana. Non-cognition is abhava, anupalabdhi. I don't see something. And how do I know that there is the absence of something? Through a pramana, Advaitins and Bhattas say, that is anupalabdhi, that is non-cognition is a pramana. Suppose I say that there is no elephant in this room. How do I know that there is no elephant? The Bhattas say it is a special pramana which is required to know that there is no elephant in this room. But what other schools like other Vedantins, Advaitins also say? Vishishtadvaitins say it is not necessary to know what is absent in a place. If you know the substratum, the place where it is absent, that is enough. You don't have to know that an elephant is not there. What is not there need not be seen at all. If you see the room, that is enough. I see the room. That is enough. Why it is necessary for accepting a pramana called non-cognition, anupalabdhi, abhava pramana is not accepted for many schools excepting these two schools. I'll tell sometimes later if possible. Why Advaitin accepts abhava as a pramana? He says, it is not a question of seeing the world. It is a question of not seeing what is not world. The Brahman as the world is not seen. You know, that is what Advaita, I think I'll explain it. See, I'll give first one, before I go, I'll just give a very mundane example. This is a problem between the schools of Vedanta as well as Vedanta and other schools, whether Abhava Pramana is accepted or not. In each school, as I told you, has their own mechanism as to why a Pramana should be accepted and why a Pramana should not be accepted. See, Vaisheshika does not accept any Shabda because he does not need any Shabda. Similarly, Vishishta Advaita and other Vedanta schools, they don't accept Anupalabdhi as a Pramana because they say that since the world is real, you have to see the world. For Advaita, the world may be seen, but it is not real. You see, it is indeterminable. What is not seen in the substratum is alone being taken into account. Another example I will give you. Suppose, see, non-cognition becomes very important for Advaita because it is what is intended is not seen. Suppose a boy has given or a girl has given a date to a boy to meet her or him in a park. The girl goes to the park at the appointed time and he does not see the boy. Now, if this question is asked as to what does that girl see, perceive, Visishtadvaitin would say, let him perceive the trees, let him perceive the mountain if it is, let him hear the sounds if there are birds. Advaitin would say, the fellow perceives nothing except in the absence of the boy. See, this is the difference. Am I clear? The absence is sometimes seen. That is why Advaitin says that here also, the world, you know, in the perception of the world, sorry, in the perception of Brahman, what is not, in the perception of the world, what is not seen is the Brahman is not perceived. So in order to have the Brahman as the essential thing and the world as illusory, one need to accept this Pramana. If time permits, next class we shall deal with that. Today, that is not in my scheme of doing epistemology today. So Visishtadvaita and Advaita accept three Pramanas, perception, inference and Shabda. And here Shabda in Visishtadvaita and Advaita includes Shruti as well as Smriti, both. Each school justifies the number and nature of Pramana it accepts and why it negates other Pramanas. The one it does not accept, it is not a mere naming of Pramanas. Not that they say, I accept two, he accepts three. No, not like that. There is the inbuilt system as to how many Pramanas can be accepted in one school and how which all Pramanas cannot be accepted. Nyaya provides the tools of reasoning and Mimamsa gives the tools of interpretation of scriptures. See, they say, Kanadam Paniniyamcha Sarva Shastra Upakarakam. That is Panini grammar and some people say Jaiminiyam. The Nyaya and Jaimini, that is Nyaya school and Jaimini's Mimamsa is very much required because the Panini talks about Shabda, the knowledge of words. Nyaya talks about the reasoning, whether it stands to reason or not. Otherwise, we cannot accept just because it is Shruti which says about it. And second is, how will the Shruti be meaningful? How will you get the meaning of the Shruti? It is by Mimamsa. So, Mimamsa is a Vakya Shastra. It talks about the interview. See, we have a very well-built hermeneutic system in Indian tradition, which is represented by this school called Mimamsa. So therefore we say our focus will be Nyaya in the topic of logic and epistemology from the standpoint of Pramana in Advaita Vedanta. In the interpretation or while defining any term, there is something called law of parsimony. The law of parsimony is something, you know, economy in the use of words. What is the lakshana for a lakshana? How do you give define a definition? The definition is defined as abhyapti, ativyapti, asambhava rahitam, rahitatvam lakshanasya lakshanam. You cannot define a word which would overpervade, whose meaning will overpervade that term. Suppose I say the cow is that which is black in color. Then buffaloes are also black. Suppose some buffaloes are black, they will become cows. So this is ativyapti, uber pervasion. So in order to the lakshana, the definition should not have this defect called uber pervasion. Or suppose I say the cows again. Suppose I say cow is an animal. No, cow is an animal. Then other animals will come in this. It is ativyapti. It is over pervading the word, the meaning of the word. Suppose I say cow is a black animal. White cows will not be counted. So it will represent only a part of the species. And suppose I say cow is a one hoofed animal. One hoofed means the leg, there is only one hoof. Cow has two. So if I say cow is one hoofed animal, there is not a single cow which can come in within this definition. So the law of parsimony is required for any involvement. Any definition. If it is violated, then it would lead to the fallacies like Gaurava, that is too large, or Laghava, too narrow definitions. Accordingly, there are four different views in our tradition as to the definition of the term prama. I have told prama means knowledge. First is Buddhist view. The Buddhist view, then second is Nyaya view, Nyayika's view. Third is Samkhya school's view. And fourth is Advaitin's view. Now, according to Buddhist, a true cognition is one which leads to successful activity. Arthakriya karitvam, pramatvam, jnanatvam. If a cognition leads to the successful activity, this was earlier definition, Dharmakriti and others have given other definitions, but this is the by and large. This is the definition for Buddhism. The arthakriyakaritvam, pramatvam, jnanatvam. So a cognition leads to a successful activity, then it is a true cognition. This corresponds almost to the pragmatic theory of truth which William James talks in the Western philosophy. Now, criticizing this view, we can say, just because a cognition leads to a successful activity, we cannot say that it is a true cognition. A cognition may lead to a successful activity, but that does not guarantee its being true. Like the cognition of sunrise and the activity following the sunrise based on the cognition of sunrise. But for that we cannot say that sun rises. That you see a sunrise, sun does not rise. Okay? That sun rises is a false cognition. But based on this cognition, your activities can go. So all the activities can follow from sunrise. That does not mean that it is based on a true cognition. The sunrise is a false cognition. Sun does not rise at all. So, but that does not mean that just because sun does not rise, therefore there is no perception is wrong. It is not, the activities are not wrong, wrongly done, no. If in spite of the perception based on non-true cognition, there can be activity. The activity can come even if the perception is wrong perception. In very crude sense, you can say, when you see a rope as a snake, you run away from the house. Even if if it is a rope snake, you do not know that it is a rope as a snake. If you see a rope as a snake, there is activity, you run away. So, the activity cannot give the sanction of the perception, cognition. The activity and cognition cannot be related. That is what Advaitins and other schools also say. So the Buddhist definition does not hold good, since every case of successful activity is not a case of true cognition. One more example. A person perceives a light at a distance and considers it as a lamp and walks towards it. But there is a successful activity. But the light he saw was from the window, and there is a gem in the corner of the room which emits light. Thus the cognition is not true. There is some light which is seen, and there is activity towards that. That there was a gem was not considered here. So the Buddhist definition that true cognition leads to successful activity is not true. A false cognition also can lead to the successful activity. Now I come to Nyaya view. Nyaya view almost corresponds with the correspondence theory of truth in Western tradition. A true cognition, the Nyayikas say, is that which cognizes an object as it is and where it is. Yatra yadasti tatra tasya anubhavaha prama. That is what in Sanskrit they say. That as it is and where it is called correspondence between cognition and object. Now, there are difficulties in this definition also. Now, how can there be correspondence between two things which out of which one is sentient and other is insentient? See, yatra yadasti tatra tasya anubhavaha prama. Whatever is wherever, to see that object there is called as knowledge. Now, the correspondence must be between knowledge and object. The Advaitin says, or other schools say, see, you can correspond between two things which are of similar nature. What is correspondence? Finding similarity. What is, how it is possible? If you have two ideas, one idea can be compared with another idea. One objective thing cannot be compared with another subjective thing. You see, your knowledge corresponds to the object. How can there be correspondence between two things out of which one is subjective and another is objective? So, the similarity or correspondence between two objects outside us is possible, or two ideas are possible, but how can knowledge and an object be compared? Knowledge is subjective and object is objective. There is no comparison possible between the two. So the Nyaya theory of truth is dismissed. It tries to compare two things which do not admit any comparison at all. The third view is of Samkhyans. That is almost the coherence theory of truth in the West. A cognition is true, the Samkhyans say, if it coheres with other cognitions. They have changed, they have modulated it a little better. Or, if it coheres with a system of knowledge, which one already has. See, how I know that something is true? I know something is true because it looks like something which I have already seen. Or, there is a system to which it admits. There is something called water, and this is water. I know that this is water. That knowledge coheres with this water. Or there is water here, there is water there. I see this as water, and there is water there. I know that is also water. Now, what is the point of agreement similarity? Is that they agree both to a larger extent with each other. That is what is the agreement. That is the coherence. Now, they talk of sambada. There is sambada between the both. Sambada means agreement. Both, then that knowledge is true knowledge. Sorry, that cognition is true knowledge. Okay, the true knowledge is not right. So the question is asked as to how will there be agreement between two things if one of the things is not seen earlier. Suppose, for example, now this theory says if a cognition coheres with another cognition, then that is true. Suppose a person has never seen a table. And I show him a table, what knowledge will he get? Or another example I will give. Suppose I say that he is Duke of Wellington to a villager in Tamil Nadu. What will he understand from out of what I say? Because it does not cohere with any knowledge that he has. You see, the knowledge already, if you have only the coherence problem comes. You suppose I say he is a Duke of Wellington, then a villager will not get any knowledge at all because it does not cohere with any knowledge that he has or a system of knowledge also which can say that this is Duke of Wellington. So, this goes to say that X is true because it coheres with the system already existing, system of already existing knowledge in this statement. Coherence with a system is the knowledge, is the test of truth. Now, another question is, how do I know that what is the guarantee that a system of knowledge is true? See, suppose an object coheres with another system of knowledge. What is the guarantee that system is true itself? The system may be false like sunrise. So, what is the guarantee that the system is true? Suppose the system of knowledge is negated as truth, then what will be the criterion of testing the truthfulness of this cognition? So, a different criterion of truth is necessary, and it is given by Advaitin. Advaitin, see, this is from all from Advaitin standpoint. Advaitin says that Buddhist pragmatic definition, Noyaika's correspondence definition, involving correspondence, and Samkhya's involving coherence is not right. What is right? The right definition of knowledge is that is knowledge which is the knowledge which is not going to be sublated, which is not going to be negated later on. That is alone knowledge. So what he says is the first criterion of knowledge according to Advaita is abadhyatva, unsublatability is the first criterion of knowledge. The entire metaphysics of Advaita presupposes this principle of abadhyatvam, that is unsublatability is the criterion of truth. And a cognition is true if it is abadhya as well as anadhigata. I will talk about anadhigata a little later. It needs to be a noble and a unique thing. If you see something earlier and then you see thing, that is not the real knowledge according to Advaitin. It may be some jnana, it is not prama. So the example for abadhyatvam is given as an instance of rope snake. A rope looks like a snake. The knowledge of the rope snake, suppose I take it as a rope snake. The snake is called as rope snake. It is not a real snake. The knowledge of a rope snake is not true because it can be sublated. Sublation is the major point of contention of Advaita. Radhakrishnan said once, why a rope appears as a snake is what a schoolboy asks, but which only philosophers answer. Now this rope snake model is the ground on which Advaita develops his theory. Now what does Advaita do when he takes the rope snake? This I give as a prelude to Advaita epistemology. What does Advaita want to talk about when he talks about knowledge? Advaita says that there are three levels in which this works. Now a person, first level, a person perceives in front a rope as a snake. He says that it is a snake. This is the subject and the snakeness is predicated of this. A little later, he comes to know that it is only a rope. He says it is not a rope, it is not a snake, it is a rope. The first statement indicates indicates his wrong cognition, and the later cognition which contradicts the first cognition. As a result of the initial cognition, he develops many psychological disorders, changes like fear, severing, bhaya kampanadikam. There is, you know, he takes it to be true, otherwise it will not. He does not see a rope as a snake and he says, oh, it is after all a rope. No. All the problems, psychological problems attached to seeing a snake will come when you see a rope as a snake. The subsequent cognition sublates the initial cognition, and this subsequent cognition is called as badhaka jnana. The initial cognition is not true. Any cognition must have a content. Without a content, a cognition will not come into being at all. You cannot see something where there is nothing. A snake is the cognition of the initial cognition, but the cognitum is rope. If the cognition is false, then the cognitum also would be false. There is no direct sublation of cognition. So the snake seen initially is a false entity. See, when a snake is seen, what is the cognitum of snake? Snake is the cognitum. The snake cognition has snake as its cognitum, the vishaya. Now, where from does this snake come? That is another question. Where from this snake come? That we will be discussing next class, when we will be talking about the theory of error according to Advaita. But now this is enough to say that the snake, which is the cognitum of the false knowledge, is wrong. So, thus the criterion of abadhyatva is applied in case of erroneous perception. Now, this is the first level. Second level, applying this criterion to our common experience in the empirical world, there is such a thing called cognition of the world. The cognition was there yesterday. See, this is the main thesis of Advaitin. See, he does not keep quiet with rope snake. Okay, rope is being seen as snake. That is not enough. The Advaitin goes to say the second level, that is the first level. Second level, the world is false. That is the important philosophical contribution, so to say. If it is, then say the cognition was yesterday, today, and it will be tomorrow in the world. Is it true then, since it is not negated? Is the empirical cognition true because it is not negated? It is true under normal circumstances. But ultimately, this is not true, since this cognition of world suffers ovulation like a snake. The world and the snake are in the same pedestal. Later, till such time it suffers ovulation, the world enjoys truth. This idea is not wrong in principle. But as even in the case of rope snake, here also there are people. See, how do you know a rope as a snake? A snake as a rope. Somebody must come from your neighbor, or if you call police, police must come and try to kill the snake. Then find out it is not a snake, it is only a rope. Then only you know, somebody has to tell you, or you yourself go and put on the light and see clearly that it is. See, it is a subsequent cognition. It is not the initial cognition. So, similarly, there are people, those who have seen the world as not true, false. So, here also there are people who point out that world suffers ovulation. And so it is not real. A reasonable person has to show for him, see for himself the fact of the statement whether the world is real or not real. The third level, I have told that there are three levels. First level is a rope snake model. Second, the world, the empirical world model. Third is the transcendental empirical, the ultimate reality. That is the model. The person has the knowledge of the ultimate reality. That is an unique cognition, and at that level there is no possibility of sublation. So, rope snake suffers sublation, the world suffers sublation, but the trans-empirical reality called Brahman will not suffer sublation. That is what Advaitin says. Since it is unsublated, then the content must be true absolutely and not provisionally. Please see, all through Advaitin has been telling, the snake is also true as long as you see that. World is true as long as you are in it. You believe it to be true. But the Brahman is not true as long as you see it. The Brahman is eternally true. That is what Advaitin's thesis. Since here cognition does not suffer any sublation, and more than that, it is a unique, it is a class by itself, that type of a cognition. Therefore, it is unsublatable. The cognition about which Shruti speaks, and which has been vouchsafed to those who have gone through the necessary discipline, can be attained by principle, in principle by everyone. This cognition of Brahman, everybody can have as much. One can also see it is not the, just because you see the rope as a snake, everybody will see the rope as a snake. And the attainment of this unique cognition is the goal of Advaitic philosophical inquiry. Like, you know, Kierkegaard talked about three levels of existence. That is aesthetics, ethical and religious. You know, similarly, Advaitin tries to, I am just giving a similar parlance from Western philosophy. Advaitin talks about Pratibhasika, Vyavaharika and Paramarthika levels. Now, level one is the case of all erroneous subjects, all erroneous perceptions involving or at the waking level, all cases of dream objects. Dream is also a perceptual experience, as even like waking, and the cognition at this level is taken to be true during that period of experience. See, dream, when you are in dream, you take the dream to be true. But when there is the transition from the dream to deep sleep, or from dream to you come back to the waking stage, the dream becomes false. It is falsified. The object becomes dream object. Suppose you are eating food in 5-star hotel in dream, and suddenly you go to deep sleep, the food goes. Or you come back to empirical stage, you find no food there. So, the cognition and also the cognitum become false once you come out of that state of your being. So, there are two types of the sublations. Sublation at the same level like waking level, a rope snake becomes a snake, and sublation in different level. What is? A dream object becomes a false object. It is a sublation in a different level. Means you are not in the same level of dream and still feeling that dream object is not true. Dream object and dream perception becomes false only when you come out of dream to another level, that is waking or sleep. So the sublation during the transition in levels, like dream objects, something is false if it is sublated, and if it is sublated, it is contradicted by a pramana. The level 1 objects are like phenomenal objects, like pratibhasika objects. Level 2 are like vyavaharika, and level 3 are like paramarthika objects, and it can correspond in another way to the state of jagrat, swapna and susupti. Level 2, this is first level, that is the rope snake level. Now level 2 is all cases of waking objects. Even these cognition suffer sublation, and therefore the waking objects are also false. What Advaitin tries to prove is, what you see in the empirical world is false. He has a very, very, you know, known logic. He gives a very philosophical logic to say this. He says, jat drushyam tat mithya. Whatever is perceived, that is all are mithya. So, even these cognition suffers sublation, and therefore waking objects are also false, and the sublation here is not so easy as it is in the case of pratibhasika, the level 1. The cognition in level 2 is more enduring than level 1 cognitions, that is pratibhasika cognition. It lasts for longer time. An easy proof for the sublation of second is dream. See, all your empirical experiences are sublated in dream experience. When you go to, you might not have money and you have not eaten for 10 days. In dream, you are dreaming that you are eating in a big hotel. So all your empirical experience that you are hungry is gone in the dream object, or you have taken a sumptuous food in a party and you have gone to dream, and you see in the dream that you are begging for food on the street. That is possible. So what happens? The empirical experience, the waking experience, gets sublated in dream, transition in the phase, in the transition in the levels. I was telling, the same level sublation, transitional level sublation, same level sublation takes place when a rope snake looks like a rope. Transition. The transition in the different level takes place when you go from one level to another level. Like from dream you go to sleep or waking, or from waking you go to sleep, there is nothing. Or dream, the waking level is gone, waking level experiences are sublated. So the sublation of level 1 and to 2 is based on our experience, which cannot be denied, since the whole thing is phenomenologically grounded. For the Advaitin, waking level does not enjoy any privileged status, and that does not mean he does not distinguish between level 2 and 1. See, the level 2, that is empirical existence, the vyavaharika world, is like pratibhasika world. That is what Advaitin says. It is also mithya, but that does not mean that he does not distinguish between the two. In level 1, the experience objects are false, and the falsity is discovered at once. And in level 2, it is permanently and totally false with authenticity. He said, in order that the level 2 experiences are permanently negated, you have to go to the level 3. See, for getting rid of rope snake, somebody has to come, or you have to put on metal light or do something so that you know that rope snake is not a snake. It needs a little training and advice. But for world to become mithya, it is not that easy. It will only take place when you go to the level 3, third level paramarthika satta. Now, what Advaitin says, you know, very vichars that in text, they say, suppose there are three people, and they are climbing the mountain. One is at the bottom, another is in the middle, another is at the top. The person who is at the top is only capable, only authentic authority to say what is there in the middle and the bottom position, not the other two. So there is a possibility of the going beyond the empirical level. That is what Advaitin says. So the objects belonging to the waking level are called vyavaharika objects, vyavaharika vastu. They last longer than prativasika vastu. That is a rope snake. Definitely, the empirical world, a snake or a rope lasts more than rope snake. Okay, none can challenge the statement without transcending the second level. You know, once unless a person goes to the third level, that is paramarthika satta, he cannot talk about whether the empirical world is truth or not truth. That question will not arise because it is truth. So this falsity, this knowledge of world being false, comes only when the person reaches the third level, the paramarthika. Like the knowledge of rope comes when you go out of prativasika to the vyavaharika, from phenomenal to the empirical. Similarly, when you go to beyond the empirical, trans-empirical state, transcendental state, the empirical state becomes mithya. Now, what is the guarantee that this cognition here will not suffer sublation? What is the guarantee that the Brahmagyana will also not go? Because rope snake goes, world goes, let the Brahmagyana also go. This is a very crucial question in Advaita. There are two important reasons for this. The cognition here, Advaitin says, is about ultimate reality. That is the identity of Brahman Atman. And second, the cognition is through Shruti, which is a pramana. See, this is the important concept epistemologically Advaita tries to bring, saying that try to perceive Shruti in a very different way. It is a pramana. Pramana means what type of pramana? It is a pramana which is free from errors of omission and commissions. The authority of Shruti, it is being apaurusaya. It is not, I will be talking sometimes when I talk about maybe next class or next. What does it mean by apaurusaya? How, why does Shruti become so important in Indian tradition? So, Shruti, what it is unquestionable. It becomes absolutely authoritative. The Vedanta accepts equivocally all the Vedantic systems, that this cognition originated by Shruti is ever valid. All other pramanas are pramanas only for courtesy sake. The Shruti is the only pramana. It is because the only valid thing to be known in Advaita is Brahmanatman, their identity. So, Shruti, which is reveals that, is also a pramana. The rest is thrown off as junk at the particular time when a person becomes a Jivan Mukta. So, thus none can find fault with this cognition. And the third reason is, if anything is to suffer sublation, it must be provided by a pramana. See, how do I know that rope snake is not the snake? Because I saw it as a rope. The pramana, the pratyakya pramana goes to make me believe that the rope snake which I have seen is not the rope snake, it is a rope. So, what happens here in Brahmagyana? There is no pramana which can sublate this knowledge. So, the cognitum of this cognition, the final cognition, that is Brahman Atman, is outside the purview of pramana vyavastha, since they have nothing to do with Brahman Atman. So, they can never contradict this level through any pramana which can sublate that. The cognition is the cognition in the level is called this level is called as paramarthika, or absolutely real, or absolute reality. The paramarthika is a single entity and a class by itself, which is spoken of as Sat, Chit and Ananda. Now, the criterion of truth, Advaitin says, the first, all this I was talking to try to show how Advaitin gives so much importance to the concept of unsublatability. Abadhyatva. If something is not sublated, then only that is true. If something is not sublated, then only it is valid. It is knowledge. And second thing he talks about is anadhiga tattva. That is what is not already known or otherwise known. The second criterion is included to exclude smriti, the memory, as a pramana. See, what happens, even if something is not negated, suppose I see this as a table. Okay, now is this table something like Brahma Jnana? Table Jnana is like Brahma Jnana? Advaitin says no, because table Jnana is produced by my memory. So all that knowledge you get from memory, Advaitin says, is wrong. Then how does the recollection takes place? The previous experience of a person becomes, you know, samskaras give the knowledge of memory. So the memory is defined as that which is product of something which is the impressions, latent impressions. There is nothing new about memory and memory or knowledge, but it is still valid. Memory or knowledge is not a prama. It may be valid, but it is not prama. Therefore, in Brahma Sutra, Shankara says, what is adhyasa? You have seen snake and you are seeing a rope as a snake. Unless somebody has seen snake, he cannot see the rope as a snake. Therefore, smriti rupaha paratra purvadrushta abhasa adhyasa, Shankara says. So, in order to define prama in a way that it would mean only Brahman and Brahma Jnana, Advaitin tries to do away with smriti, the memory, because it will produce the whole world before you. Okay? That is the reason why Advaitin says that anadhiga tattva, it is not so far known. Brahma Jnana has not come so far. So, by prama, what can be known is only Brahma Jnana. So, finally, the definition of knowledge is, according to Advaita, anadhigata, abadhitartha vishayakam jnanam prama. With this definition, let us go to talk about perception. How does Advaita talk about perception? What is pratyaksha? Now, there is pratyaksha, there are four views. I'll deal with very precisely. The first is Buddhist view. Buddhists say that we see something which is unique, particular. That is unique, particular is alone seen. Sulakshana. Sulakshana means, you know, Buddhist use the word sulakshana to indicate this unique particular. What is being seen by pratyaksha? By pratyaksha, what do you see? For Buddhists, they say that we see the unique particular. They do like that because for Buddhists, there is nothing called universal. What is universal? Universal is a padartha which is one, present in everything. Like the cow has a cowness. Cowness is a jati, samanya, which is present in all the individuals of the species called cow. Now, Buddhists don't accept such thing at all. They say that it is only the vishesha, that is the whatever you see there, that is present. Okay, and how do you see that? That is because of sulakshana. As and when you see something, the particularity alone is seen. Now, the Advaitins and others go to say that if you say that the particularity alone is seen, now what would happen? What happens is, if it is particularity and you see in a moment, they say everything is momentary. That is why particularity has to be accepted. I see something as this moment. Next moment you are different and different thing is there, the same thing is not there. Now, Advaitins and others say, if it is a unique, particular swalakshana which you say temporarily or momentarily, then that knowledge is not knowledge, it is a sensation. There is a difference between sensation and knowledge. They say, suppose, see, knowledge requires sensation as well as interpretation. How does the knowledge take place? Knowledge does not, suppose I go on, the perception, will you understand anything? There is something I am talking, but that does not mean anything. It is a sensation that which is coming to you, but that is not complete. That does not give any knowledge because it is not interpreted. Suppose there is a sound coming from outside. Suppose somebody is playing veena or violin. You know, first you so know that there is some sensation of a sound, then you interpret, oh, it must be a violin. So, the knowledge is sensation plus interpretation. It is not just sensation. But what Buddhist talk in saying that knowledge is swalak, pratyakya is swalakshana, they are talking only about a sensation and they don't have scope for interpretation, in which case there will be no pratyakya at all. The second view is of that of Noyaika. Noyaika says that there is indriya artha sannikarsa janyam jnanam pratyakya. Pratyakya is, the perception is, where there is a contact between sense organ and sense object. That is pratyakya. Now, the contact between indriya and artha is called as sannikarsa, and that sannikarsa gives you the knowledge. Now, according to Nyaya, cognition arises because of this sannikarsa, this sambandha. And see what happens when indriya and artha sannikarsa janya jnana pratyakya, we say that when there is a contact between sense and object, there is pratyakya, perception. This perception is there in case of anumana also. Anumana also involves sense object contact, isn't it? You see smoke. See, there is sense object contact. Sense object contact is there in anumana also, upamana also. So you cannot, this definition that indriya artha sannikarsa goes to talk about upamana, anumana and other things. Therefore, this definition is, since it suffers from this fallacy, it is not the right definition. So, in order to change this definition, what happened? Another thing, there is something called yogi pratyaksha. Where is there is no indriya and artha sannikarsa is not there, still you get knowledge. See, knowledge is also, knowledge can be obtained in case of a yogi, even though there is no sense, and you accept yogi pratyakya. And if you say indriya artha sannikarsa janyam jnanam pratyakya, then this will not serve your problem, your purpose, because you accept laukika, alaukika, and alaukika pratyakya accepts yogi pratyakya. A man, a yogi, can see what is happening from here at another place some thousands of kilometers away from here. So what happens? So this is changed to another definition by the later Noyaikas. They say sakshat pratiti. We see something directly and that gives us the knowledge of the object, and that is the proper pratyaksha. Now the Mimamsakas and Advaitins come and they say that the problem is, what is, how does knowledge come for Mimamsakas and Advaitins? They say the problem is not in seeing something. Now what is the mechanism you have to see? They had a mechanism that there must be contact, and you have dropped that mechanism. So now you have to tell us what is the mechanism. Advaitin says that vritti is the mechanism. That there is a mental mode created when you see an object. That is, my mind, like the water goes from some place, you know, reservoir, and takes the form of the field. If the field is rectangular, the water becomes rectangular in shape. If it is circular, it becomes circular in shape. Similarly, the mind goes to the object. See, this is Advaitin's theory. The mind comes out backed by the self and takes the shape of the object. And this shape of the mind is called as vritti. And through vritti only the pratyakya, the perception takes place. So what happens is, indriya vritti is present in the case of all the external objects. When I see the objects outside, the sense organs are active. And there is also a case of Ishvara. For him also there is a perception, because he is spoken of as Sarvajna. How does Ishvara become Sarvajna? It is through maya vritti. See, the vritti is very important for Advaita. He says all the perceptions would hold good if vritti, that means the mode. How do I see you? I see you in my mind. See, suppose I look at you, I don't see you, there will be no perception of you. My eyes is in this direction, but I am thinking something, there is no vritti. The vritti will take place when indriya is backed by the mind, no? The mind backed by the self, the indriyas backed by that mind goes to make that vritti. So the modification that the antakarana undergoes in keeping with the object perceived is technically known as vritti. The cognition of table, chair, etc. is said to be valid because it is gained in normal manner through antakarana vritti, and that is why it is not sublated. But in the case of rope snake, the initial cognition is sublated by subsequent cognition, even though the function of the indriya is common to both. See, I see a rope as a snake through my indriya only. But what has happened? Why I have not seen it? Because it is not the indriya jnana. In between, something else has come. Why do I see a rope as a snake? Rope. If I see a rope as a rope, it is indriya vritti, antakarana vritti, mind sees it. But in case of rope being looked like snake, mind has no role there. It is apart from mind, something else, that is ignorance, avidya vritti. And the snake was not there before the perception, and it is not going to be there in the after the sublation. And while perceiving the snake, the rope alone exists, but it is cognized as a snake. For this snake, the cognitum is not a snake but a rope. At the time of perception, for that person, at that place, not for all others, there will be snake. So where from did this come? Did the rope undergo any change? No. It remains a rope in the past, present, as well as in the future. It will be rope only. So, but the perception of a rope cannot be denied. Advaitin says that the snake seen at that place and at that time to that particular person is the projection of avidya. It is avidya vritti. See, that is how you see. Avidya is responsible for the existence of snake there. And now there are five kinds of vrittis according to Advaitin, and perception takes place through that five. The second page, antakarana vritti would give you the knowledge of the external world. And the avidya, the rope would look like a snake, the second page, the last, you see, when illusory objects could be known by avidya vritti, the ignorance will play a role. Apart from your indriya, indriya may say, indriya may see, but it will not see it properly. The third thing is, Ishvara sees the world. Ishvara becomes omniscient. Omniscience of Ishvara is because of his having maya vritti. And fourth is, you are happy, unhappy, you have jealousy and all that antakarana vrittis. You know, those which are subjective states. The subjective states are known through something called sakshi vasya, because you cannot see that, because it is a mind, mental modifications. The mind is modified as love, hatred. So mental modifications can be manifested by the self, which works as a witness. And the fifth is very important from a Vedic standpoint. He says the liberation can be had when you have akhandakara vritti, that is immediate cognition of the Brahman. And that will not be sublated at all. Jivan Mukta will have the knowledge that he is Brahman, and he will have no other knowledge. You know, at no point of time that will go and another knowledge will come. No. It will not happen. The Jivan Mukta will have that akhandakara vritti jnana that will arise also in the antakarana to some extent, which will not be there. Manonasa. And Advaitin talks about five types of vritti in order to account for the concept of perception according to him. In next class, I will talk a little about the erroneous perception, and I will go to deal with why it is so important to deal with epistemology in Advaita from the Shankara and post-Shankara preceptors. Thank you for giving me the patient hearing. I think it was a little difficult to digest, but yes, please. Yes, correct, very correct.
I guess I'm just a little bewildered, because something in me wants to have only three vrittis correspond to three models of experience.
That's right. Yeah, what happens there is, that is a good question indeed. What happens is, avidya vritti and maya vritti and sakhi vasya, they three come in one this thing. This antakarana vritti, maya vritti and sakhi vasya, these three are in empirical level experience, where antakarana vritti you see the things the worldly objects are seen by antakarana vritti. The mind comes out through the sense organs and takes the shape of the objects, that is vritti, and the perception takes place. Second thing, the Ishwara is accounted in Advaita in the empirical level only. So Ishwara knows everything, that is also an empirical level experience. Third is Sakshi Vasya, like love, hatred, all these things are empirical only. You know, it is not possible to have all these things at a trans-empirical, mind will not be there at all. So the mind and the source of the mind called avidya or maya is operative, those are taken as empirical. So the three will come in empirical. Second one comes in pratibhasika. Avidya vritti accounts for the pratibhasika jnana. Antakarana vritti, maya vritti and sakhi vasya account for the empirical world. Akhandakara vritti, it is also in empirical world, but it shows the trans-empirical world. It shows that the world is no more real.
Is that the time when the person becomes a
jivan mukta? Yes, for a jivan mukta, akhandakara vritti is possible. He sees that he is nothing but Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi, knowledge will come.
Would I be right in summarizing what you said today, is that anything, any kind of information that is based or dependent upon whether maya based or the normal human cognition cannot constitute knowledge? Because knowledge is true.
No, essentially it is not Brahma, yes. But Advaitin, yes. That is what I also told. See, the Advaitin talks about empiricistic epistemology. Advaita talks about epistemology for the world, to account for the world, worldly experiences.
I accept that. But why I'm using the word in the normal, by the human normal cognitive processes, it doesn't matter whether you're dreaming, but it's still within the cognitive process. There is an altered perception, there is a memory, there is a language implicit in that as well. So if you take those three main features of cognition, whether it is in the dream state or whether it is in the awakened state, anything that is dependent on those cannot be true knowledge. And when you remove the dependence on that, then the true knowledge...
See, there are two ways, Advaitin has two types of discourse. One is the discourse from paramarthika state, from transcendental level. So you don't need any epistemology to account for that excepting Shruti. And Shruti also becomes useless once you go to that state, right? So at the transcendental, for the transcendental knowledge, even where Shruti also does not have the efficacy of being the Shruti, being a Pramana, the Pramana Vyavastha does not work. Where does Pramana Vyavastha work? It works only for the empirical knowledge. And why empirical knowledge is so important? Empirical knowledge is so important. I will deal with that in the next class, to show that the world is ultimately not true.
That's exactly
what. See, that is what it is. So all the whole lot of Pramana Vyavastha has been done by Advaitin to account for the empirical experience. How does my empirical experience take place in this way? Antakarana vritti and Sakhi Vasya. Avidya vritti and maya vritti for Ishwara, which is not for the man. So, but these three things are only to account for the empirical world experience. Trans-empirically, there will be only Brahman experience. Therefore, I told that Advaitin talks about there is an empiricistic epistemology. The epistemology works for the works for only the world, how you see things. Therefore, Advaitin accepts six pramanas. I told you, why they accept that even the non-existence of an elephant here should be noticed. Suppose you go to the house and you lock the key. A visitor Advaitin, another Nayak also. Why visitor Advaitin? Nayak will say, okay, you see the house. But the man searches only the key. Non-existence of the key is perceived by the man. So Advaitin gives the nuances of perception in a very subtle way to account for all human experiences in the world. And for Brahma Jnana, there is a different discourse. Therefore, I told there is a two-tier discourse in Advaita. One is for empirical discourse. That is why so many levels I was talking. First level, Prativasika. Second level, Vyavaharika. Third level, Paramarthika. And Paramarthika does not withstand or stand by any epistemic tools or pramana.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
If you take modern psychology, cognition has got these three important parts, which is what you are also saying.
That is what I said. It is like modern
language,
psychology.
If you take language to be Shruti, once you go beyond that, then none of that, you have to go beyond that to actually get to the actual truth. That means you're leaving your cognition behind to get to the truth.
Thank you. Yeah, Jamre. That is also Sakhi Vasya. But what I am trying to say is, how does the antakarana, see, what is happiness, what is unhappiness? What are those? Antakarana vrittis, right?
Yeah.
How are those seen?
No, I agree with you.
See, I am not talking about Sakshi and what the Sakshi does. I am not talking about that. I am talking about how happiness, unhappiness, love, hatred and states like that are known. You have to account for those things because those are also perceived states. I feel that I am happy. How do I know that I am happy? Happiness is a mode of mind. It is not my eyes, okay, I see I am happy, no. Or I feel through my tactual perception that or taste that I am happy, no. It is not none of these things. By five ways of sensual perception, you cannot know you are happy. Happiness is a mental mode. Now, how does this mental mode known? Advaitin says, later Advaitin, that it is Sakshi, because it is so, it is Sakshi on which this mind is rates for any perception, but it is directly revealed by Sakshi that you are happy.
That's actually what it is that it's paramarthika.
No, it is. I am not talking about the concept of Sakshi. I am talking about the role the Atma plays in giving you the empirical knowledge. That is why Sakshi, the role of Sakshi, it is not the concept of Sakshi. What are you? Sakshi is paramarthika. Because it sees avidya, how will you know avidya also? That in the state of deep sleep, you know that I did not know anything and I slept well. How did you know? Because your mind was not working. You knew because of Sakshi, right? I am not talking about that Sakshi. That is a different of perception. I am talking about sukha, dukkha, ichha, dvesha, desire. How are these things known? If these are known because of the involvement of the self with the mind, because mind is the only thing that modifies, isn't it? Even in this question will come in the swapna also. Swapna, how do I, the mind sees and mind makes. Same thing. Pardon?
You say it's not an information that is given through memory. Like
which?
The result of this analysis that one does, by the sublation of state.
No. That,
what I mean is that had
Which one?
Well, yes, the dream does get sublated by waking, right? Or by deep sleep.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling.
So this sublation, yes, it's an experience.
That is a
how do we know that, you know, when we do affirm that it is sublated, how do we know it's not an information that we gather from our memory as a waking?
No, that is not what I'm telling. What Advaitin does is a very special type of thing. The whole exercise for Advaitin is towards understanding and proving that there is only one reality, Brahman. What is Brahma for Advaitin? Brahma is not perceiving the table is not Brahma. Brahma, Brahma Iva, that is what Vedanta Parivasa says. Now, Brahma is Brahman. What is Brahman? Brahman is not something which you have seen. Okay? Brahman is yourself, but you do not know that. How is Brahman? What type of a Brahman it is? It is not, you should not mistake it for the empirical objects which you have already seen. See, if Abhaditattva alone is, if you say that only unsublatability is knowledge, then table will become knowledge. Table knowledge will become knowledge. Advaitin does not accept that. So therefore, he has made the whole exercise in such a way to suit only Brahma. How is Brahman? It is not anything empirical. So in order to cut, what is empirical now? Empirical objects are those objects which you have either seen or it remains as a part of the memory. Now how is a world known? World is known through the memory. How do I know things? Because of memory. Advaitin tries to avoid this memory. He says nothing that which is known already can be prama. So in that way, the whole empirical knowledge is being, relegated to the background of falsity. And therefore, Brahmagyan alone, that is why Smriti Rupaha, Shankara says, what happens in Adhyasa? Adhyasa, the main ingredient is memory, isn't it? Otherwise, you cannot see the snake here. Unless somebody has seen a snake, will not be able to see a snake in a rope. So that smriti will create a problem. So here the smriti should not create any such problem because empiricity has no place in transcendental reality. That is why the whole epistemology is geared towards that direction and smriti is being cut off. That is why anadhigatattva, you have not seen so far, not seen so far ness, a state in which there, the object comes as a fresh object, not being seen earlier. That is included in the criteria of truth. This is the reason. Because all other things are stale, you have seen already. You see your mother, father, world, everything. This is what I am and I have. All those are because of memory and perception created things. That has nothing to do. The world around you must not be there for that. Anadhigatattva is being used as a criterion of truth according to Advaita. Thank you. Next week we will be missing you. Does not matter. I'm making all the papers ready. And I'll give you a whole bunch of papers to you.